Just Me, a place to be me, where you get to experience life. Life is a journey, not a guided tour. If you want the rainbow, you have to go through the rain.
Welcome, welcome, guys. Welcome back to another episode of Just Me Podcast. And today we are going to be wrapping up our topic about stress and returning back to school. We've talked a lot about what stress looks like for our children, our teenagers, and our college students as they return back to school. We've also had some fascinating conversations with faculty, administration, staff about what that looks like for our teachers and our parents returning back to school. And we're going to square things off with a little panel discussion talking about continued stress, burnout, and how we work with that, work through that, and how we gain support so that we continue to take care of ourselves so we can take care of each other and work with our communities, okay? So just to kind of sum up what we've done, what we've talked about, we have in other episodes discussed what stress is, how there is positive stress, there's tolerable stress, and then there's chronic stress, and what that looks like in our kids, our college students, our teenagers, and as it relates in the school systems. We've talked to academic representatives. There was a coach that we spoke to about how he sees stress showing up for his athletes and how he supports his students with working through them. And now we have three amazing representatives from the academic system. So I'm going to introduce them right now, and then we're going to discuss a little bit about what stress and burnout look like and get right into some panel questions, okay? So the first person that we have on this panel, Ms. Jasmine Brown, and she is currently a elementary school social worker. Welcome, Ms. Brown. And then we have Mr. Marlon Nolan, and he is a professor at two universities within the area. He's been a professor since 2020, so he'll be giving us some insight as it relates to our college students. Welcome, Mr. Nolan. And we also have Miss Ashley McLeod, and she is a middle school multi-classroom leader working with our teachers and providing that support in the classroom. And she works on the middle school level. So, real fast, we've discussed a lot about stress and what that looks like. So, just the over-engagement, a lot of emotions being our system, our emotional system is maybe over processing things, high reaction to stimuli, and what that looks like for our kids. So it might look like some acting out behaviors or challenges with listening in the classroom, especially coming out of COVID when they were doing a lot of online learning. And so coming back into a classroom, that can be very stressful for our kids at the middle school level, elementary school level, and at the collegiate level. And then that can also create some anxiety disorders, that can also create behavioral concerns. On the faculty and staff side, a lot of times when we work with our academic representatives, it can be stress, but it can also trickle over into burnout. And when we think about burnout and we try to acknowledge burnout, it's going a lot further than just the regular stress. So what stress is versus what burnout is are two different things. The burnout is just having emotional fatigue, that exhaustion, feeling like, oh my goodness, I can't do this, or it's just really hard to motivate yourself to get up or get to the next task. And so when we think about emotional fatigue and we think about that as it relates to coming out of 2.5 years of online learning for teachers and for students, and then we're forced to go back into the classroom face-to-face, what does that emotional fatigue look like when we think about students in the classroom? Ms. Jasmine, what have you noticed?
When it comes to emotional fatigue, well, I'll start off with saying that as a school social worker,
one of my main jobs is attendance. And so when I talk with the staff a lot, they mentioned that school is a bit optional now. So you see a lot of that fatigue show up in students not coming to school, although at an elementary school level, they don't necessarily control whether they get to school or not, but they don't really want to be there as much. And as you mentioned, the behaviors, you can see that in their behaviors. We've had a lot of referrals to myself, the school social worker, and a counselor based on them not being able to have the attention span to even want to learn.
That's a good point. Absolutely. Mr. Nolan, what about at the collegiate level? What do you recognize?
At the collegiate level, I work in a graduate program. So my students are non-traditional students, adult learners. So I recognize that the pandemic, when things became virtual, there was a silver lining for individuals who were able to work from home and still address collateral duties that were related to their families. So now that we're back in the classroom, it's an added stressor with a lot of adult loners having to manage their family life and be away from home. I find that they're having to navigate different avenues with their partners, their spouses, and their family members in order to get things done more appropriately. So it's an additional emotional added stressor.
Absolutely. And what about you, Ms. Ashley? Anything that you've noticed as far as with emotional exhaustion with the population that you work with?
So at the middle school level, you already are dealing with a fluctuating environment mentally and hormonally, period, before there was the pandemic. And so now that they are coming out of being able to be at home, well, you get two reactions. You have those who are very excited to be there because they, at home, they were babysitters and they were helpers and they were isolated or stuck with grandma or whoever. So there are those that are excited to be there, but for other purposes other than learning, you know, they want to be there for social reasons and not necessarily academic reasons. And then you have those who thrive in the virtual setting and don't want to be face-to-face because you didn't have the aspect of bullying and social pressure. You didn't have inclusion versus exclusion, all those kind of things. On the academic end, it's definitely, students have definitely taken a hit because they don't have the stamina that they once had to maintain the attention or the job to produce quality work. They think everything should, they just like, oh, I did it. And that's supposed to be it. Also emotionally, I'm noticing that they struggle with authority. They are extra rebellious, overly opinionated. And when I say overly opinionated, I mean uninformed opinion, you know. So I don't want to say that I don't respect student voice. I just want them to be critical and creative thinkers and not just spouting fake news. And so that lends to behavior issues, that lends to lower performance. And the worst part of it all that's beyond their control and beyond our control is, despite the ripple effect of the pandemic, our sector of the world decided to go back to normal. Like, it's not like they revised what grade levels look like. They didn't revise testing. They did not revise. There was no room created for what happened. Like, we're never going to be the same as we were before the pandemic. But legislation did not consider that with testing. And so that creates pressures on the district, which puts pressure on principals, which puts pressure on teachers, that then trickles down to students. And I will say they're also more comfortable with failure. I'm seeing that at an alarming rate, that they are more comfortable with failure because the definition of success is fluid and it's changing. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm seeing.
I like what you said with that, Ms. Ashley, as far as coming out of a pandemic, and I would challenge, you know, what our definition is or how we operationalize coming out of a pandemic, because I feel like, you know, there's still a significant worry that we have, especially for our teachers and our individuals who have autoimmune disease or are compromised from that as a result of health concerns. But with that, like you said, we were kind of as a society put back into this environment without any type of, hey, well, here's a handbook on how to do it. It was just good luck. And we're just going to start back up where we left off. How has that been a stressor for teachers who, A, did not know how to necessarily teach virtually when we went into virtual learning, but now coming back into the field where you're dealing with different behaviors, you're dealing with already burnout and compassion fatigue, because as adults, we've had to manage our own stressors around the pandemic, and then we have to come back, push our own stuff aside, and make sure that we're present for these students. And the legislation or the school systems, I don't know if there was a good blueprint on how to do that. It was just, here, we got to get back to normal. Hurry up and get back to normal. What do you guys think?
Well, you and I and Ms. Tracy had this discussion the other day, is that you can't go back. You're going to have to change because of COVID, everything has changed. So with the assumption that we can go back to what we were doing before, that is not realistic anymore. And I think that's where we're failing at as it relates to administrators and, you know, students, is that as Ms. Ashley said, it's like, okay, let's go back to where we are. And we can't do that anymore. We have to create a new normal. Right. They have to know where we are.
And build our way back up. I think that's where the dialogue, instead of coming back in where we left off at, you got to go back and build, because it's a whole new mentality and things like that. So, but as you had spoken, we talked about the emotional fatigue, what it looks like in the students. What does it look like in the staff? You know, because y'all face it, your own family life, then you got to come with the children and then their family lives and their stressors. So there has to be an extra layer of exhaustion on the staff itself. So what does that look like? Or what has it looked like for these past couple of weeks? And it's just been the beginning, just started.
Well, before I answer that question, I do want to challenge that we don't need to build back up. We don't need to get back to a place. We need to be comfortable with the possibility of completely reshaping and reimagining what education looks like. And that's the conversation that's not being had. And that's the work that the powers that be don't want to do. Like teachers realize that, parents realize that, even students realize that things like the pandemic reveal that education does not have to look like the industrial model that it was set up to be way back when. But that's not being heard and considered widespread. And that's creating resentment within the field.
Mm-hmm. And that resentment is kind of what teachers, what staff, what faculty have been experiencing, is that, hey, you're trying to squeeze something out of nothing right now.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's education, period. So I'm going to let you know that. That's an education, period. We make a lot out of nothing, okay? I feel like the Lord breathes on that and lets us have a little bit of his power with multiplication. But to speak to the question, my job is to support teachers, not just to train them, but to support, to advocate, to assist, to help them improve their craft. And so in the pandemic, you know, we spend a lot of time learning on the job, building an airplane while I was up in the air. And a bulk of my job was advocating and arguing with administration about what was a realistic expectation on teachers and what wasn't. celebrating teachers who are able to think outside the box and make things happen for our students. And I'm happy. I also work at a high need school, a Title I school. And so you're dealing with the inequitable access to technology and, just even a learning environment. You took for granted that everybody doesn't have a quiet room to go to listen to a teacher and to learn. And so now that we're back, I feel like, and I'm not alone in my sentiments, but I feel like the powers that be expect us to keep all of the magic we worked during the pandemic and add on additional responsibilities. It's like, oh, we saw that y'all survived and y'all adapted. So I want you to be super virtual and techie, and I want you to manage in-person behaviors, and I want you to track data, and I want you to take this baby who reads at a first grade level and they pass an eighth grade level test. I want you to do all of that with no additional support, no additional money, no additional time. And be at this meeting and put a smile on your face and don't write them up and don't send them out the classroom and don't be absent. Don't take your mental health day, all of that. And so my job is to support teachers. I said in the meeting yesterday, I'm trying to make sure they don't quit on me, you know, like, because that is what we're seeing, a mass exodus in education, because we don't feel respected. We feel like do people. And when I say we, I include myself, because some of the things they expect me to do as a coach is not realistic. Like, you're not going to make me be an administrator about my coach. You're not going to make me be a psychologist when I'm our coach. You're not going to make me do those things. You're not going to make me betray the confidentiality I have with my teachers because you're not willing to invest in relationship building. And so that is one of the greatest challenges. And this year, a perfect example of unrealistic expectations. This year, I was given a class to teach. So I have about 9 teachers I coach, as well as a group of 7th graders to teach with the same expectations. So you grade me more with less time, less resources, and you expect miracle signs and wonders. And it can make it hard to want to come to work. I already have teachers who are tired, already starting to take off days, already letting me know they don't know if they're going to make it to June. And so it puts me in a very hard position, because while I understand where they're coming from, I also see the bigger picture as to why this really doesn't need to be an option. Because teacher turnover, high absenteeism with our staff, does reflect in the lack of CD achievement. It does reflect in the increase of behavior issues. It does want to chip away at staff morale, because then when you're not there, where other staff members are expected to carry your load and pick up what's happening with those students. Or if you have a substitute that doesn't have classroom management and the kids are off the chain in that class, then they bring that same off the chain energy into the next course. And so it is a disgusting, vicious cycle of unrealistic expectations, lack of respect, lack of compensation. Like, our district did what felt like a very rude thing. Like, they had these great sign-on bonuses for new teachers, which we're not against people getting paid. But there was no consideration for your teachers who chose to stay, who did not take other jobs when they could have, who stayed loyal. There is no appreciation there, and they see it and they feel it. Mm-hmm. And I'm very nervous of what the next 5 years of education will look like. Class sizes are growing. The COVID measures that we took last year when we first came back have quickly been thrown out the window. So no one's worried about space. No one's worried about masks. No one's worried about hygiene. You are expected to go back to school with a virus that is now endemic without proper tools. And then when anybody gets sick because of HIPAA, you don't know that child was put out of the class. You don't know that child's absent because they have COVID and you've been breathing it in. You know, so you don't get the luxury of protecting yourself or your family. It is just a hope you don't get it type situation. So, yeah, welcome to public education.
Wow.
And technology does not make it better. we're blessed. We're grateful for the technology that we finally became a one-to-one district. But what happens is they use the technology as now a micromanaging tool. Oh, you got a computer. You can get on this virtual meeting. Like, they want to control all your time. You know, this virtual meeting, you can come in this, you can do this. Your kids can do this and this and this. And they purchase all these extra learning tools. And like I told my teachers in PLC this week, these platforms do not replace you. You know, at the end of the day, you're still needed. And there's not enough videos, games, electronic worksheets that's going to ever replace what a teacher does in a classroom. And so that's the state of things.
So even now, it seems like that burnout is going to come quicker because it's important to be more mindful and to be and to have you conduct that self-care to check yourself so you don't put your position in, you know, so you don't be positioned.
Well, their favorite buzzword right now is SEL, which is social emotional learning. And they're jumping through hoops to make sure that we're teaching the whole child and that we're considering students' feelings. And I'm not saying these things sarcastically, because I feel like if you're a quality educator, these things are embedded into your practice anyway. But while we are promoting this with the student body, it's the same considerations are not being given to the staff. And that hypocrisy feels burnout. Yeah, and I think that's the worst thing about education is we teach and model expectations for students that we do not employ for adults. That's good for all parties involved. Mm-hmm. And I feel bad for everybody. So there's not one villain. I feel bad for principals. I feel bad for superintendents. I feel bad for teachers. I feel bad for teacher assistants. I feel bad for bus drivers. It is an overload on the entire system. And I don't know how it's going to be fixed in a way that's not going to cause more damage.
And I think that goes into another aspect of the concept of burnout is with burnout, besides the emotional fatigue that one experiences, is that depersonalization, that I am so tired that it becomes very cynical. So you may not recognize what you're doing because there's just so much work to be done. But we find that some of the basic normal social emotional things that students do, like maybe coming back from recess and they're super energized and they're bouncing off the walls. Absolutely, because they just came in from recess. But for someone who's already burned out, who's already emotionally fatigued, stretched thin, that can look like something completely different. There becomes that threshold of tolerance becomes a lot less. I know that even at the college level, some of the questions that maybe students have that we take for granted as, oh, well, you should know this. When some of the questions that they ask, maybe they don't know this, how to do citations on a paper. There were 2 years where a lot of the learning for our high school students was virtual. And so then they're applying for college and some of these basic things that they should have learned in high school, maybe they didn't get. And so I was just curious to know that what does that look like on a collegiate level, that depersonalization, or if you've experienced any of that or have seen that as an example in the collegiate level, Mr. Marlin?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I'm working in higher education, specifically with adult learners. It's an interesting dyad because you have that dynamic of an adult learner who, has experience, world experiences, and you have to have respect for the person, and you have to be aware and cognizant of that and some of their experiences that they may have had. Just speaking specifically in regards to being an adjunct and in general, the fatigue and burnout could come from just understanding the role and what it is in and of itself. Being adjunct, if anyone doesn't know, is part time. So if you're part time, more than likely you have other responsibilities as the instructor at a collegiate level. So it's just being able to navigate those and being mindful of, what you need and what your supports are, and how to advocate for that and understand what your students' needs are, because if you're not there full time, you're getting a different number of students that are coming in. You have different personalities that you have to work with, different learning styles and understanding what that is on an adult level. So by not being full time, you have to understand there's different parts of the puzzle that you're missing. You're not there for certain faculty meetings, so you have to learn to fill in the gaps, and you don't have office time where you can meet new students and get to know them on a personal level. So understanding and learning what those student needs are on an ongoing basis while you're in the classroom. So you may recognize that a student is struggling with certain learning instruction, or maybe they didn't get something from their undergraduate experience, or maybe from the high school level, and just recognizing that and learn not to respond or be reactive to, what you may expect someone to know at an adult learning circumstance. So just being mindful and understanding what your needs are, what the student's needs are, and finding those avenues to provide that support. So there are supports for the student and for the faculty.
Absolutely. Ms. Ashley, Ms. Jasmine, any type of other examples or insight that you guys would like to share? Because I know that at the end of the day, we're all human. And while we don't mean to say cynical statements or sarcastic statements, when you are being stretched again so thin, it becomes very challenging to muster up that compassion, i.e. the burnout, the compassion fatigue. I know in the healthcare system, if a doctor is seeing somebody back to back to back to back, there's going to be that element of, okay, I just need to get into this this visit with this patient and get out within 10 minutes. And I don't have the time to listen to their complaints. I just need to come and treat this thing and get out. Because if I add any more onto my plate, it's going to be too much.
Yeah, so I think my experience has been a little bit different because I am a new school social worker. It's only been about a month and a few days. So I feel like I am trying to do some more of that, reaching a little bit farther to meet the student and to get to know them more and support them. But I'm also trying to find that common ground because I just started and I pray I have a long ways to go and I don't want to burn myself out as well. So finding that middle ground is something that I've been working on. So I really love what Ms. Ashley said and what Marlon said. That's really going to help me with my role as a school social worker.
Man, all I would add is, one, Ms. Brown, you are in an ideal place because you don't know post-COVID. I mean, you don't know pre-COVID, so you have nothing to compare it to. So you will be equipped for the current state of education. And I think that while burnout is very real, you are absolutely right. Tolerance does decrease with things that are normal. As educators, you're trained on equity, you're trained on SEL, and you have thousands of different learning needs, emotional needs, different backgrounds representing your home. And then you add into the fact you have your own personal life and situations, and the current climate, cancel culture and trauma and toxic. And these are real things, but they're also low-key buzzwords as well. It's leading to people feeling like, I'm not going to do this anymore. And they just leave, and there's no concern or regard to the impact of that decision. And so that is one of my greatest challenges as a coach, is to encourage people and let them see the good, like maintaining the validity of how you feel right now, the moment, while still remaining hopeful. Like keeping the goal present, knowing that your work matters, that you are making an impact, and still acknowledging that you're tired, overwhelmed. That's the true balance of, this is how I feel, but this is not necessarily the full reality. And getting not just teachers, but students as well, to feel your feelings, but don't let them necessarily lead and guide every decision. It's like, when this feeling passed, then what? What's the next step? And the decision that you're about to make in this emotional state, is it going to give you the results that you can deal with later? And that is a very hard principle to teach a child and sometimes even an adult.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that that also kind of what you just said, Ms. Ashley, we've also, while the pandemic has occurred, we've also had several different concerns, in your face concerns, very upfront concerns with racial inequity, with ethnic inequity. You know, just to recap a little bit, George Floyd, different things like that. So carrying that emotional fatigue back into an element of, hey, I have to show up for these kids. Hey, I have to be the leader as the adult. I have to show up. I can't show all of my emotions or my discourse, but in the back of my mind, I know it is impacting me. And so that can be that juggling, that emotional juggle can be very challenging for adults. And then we expect kids to do it. So we expect kids, we expect college students to, hey, you just came out of a pandemic or quote unquote out of a pandemic. Hey, you just had a lot of other racial inequities, social inequities that you've experienced back to back to back to back in your face. And we expect you not to, quote unquote, act fool in the classroom or be completely present in the classroom or not tune out as much in the classroom. Or we expect you to show up every day to class for our college students and not miss a class and have an assignment done after you've been in a 3-hour long class. Mm-hmm. That's a lot. That's a lot. But the last one, as far as pointers on how you know that you are burnt out versus stressed, is that feeling of personal ineffectiveness, that feeling that that self-doubt. Am I really being effective in this classroom? Am I really being effective conveying this information effectively? And into what capacity? I don't know if you guys have seen that from students, like, oh, well, what's the point of me even coming to school? Or if you've seen it on the staff level, questioning whether the lessons are even effective or do I really have the students' attention?
Well, I definitely see it with adults more so than children. The students that I would most likely see burnout are the ones who are self-motivated and driven. And have that intrinsic motivation. Sometimes they put unrealistic pressure on themselves, mm-hmm. that may be mirrored from, you know, the teachers and the parents that they are surrounded by. And I think what adds to burnout, and this is going to sound ugly, and I'm okay with it, is that because of the crisis that education finds itself in, as a profession, we're lowering our expectations for who we hire while maintaining high expectation for what should happen at the end of the school year. And it's creating this this complacency and mediocrity where the people who know they're not doing what they could do, and I'm not talking about the impossible, I'm just talking about your job, will quickly feel like, well, I'm here and that should be enough. You know, who else wants this? Who else is going to come and do this? And so they use it as leverage to not be their best selves, which then creates, you know, other symptoms. It erodes staff morale. It shows up in student achievement and so many other things. And so those who do care and are there on purpose and, you know, have a sense of honor to the role, those are the ones that are burned out. The rest of them think they're on a paid vacation.
And I would even go as far as to say the ones who feel as though they are maybe on a paid vacation may be so far that they've actually checked out emotionally as well, that they are in that depersonalization stage where they are demonstrating that those signs of burnout. It just looks a little differently for them. But unfortunately, that doesn't take away from the ineffectiveness that that creates for our students.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And when I listened to you describe burnout, I was like, well, dang, I'm burned out. I've been burned out. I live in burnout. Like, my house smells like fire. And I think what keeps me going and the reason why I haven't, like, collapsed, gave up, or checked out or depersonalized, like you said, is that, one, I'm a woman of faith, and so my faith guides me. And, you know, I don't see it as a job. I see it as a call. And so that creates a level of expectation that's just not going to let me out like everybody else. Two, I'm a mother, so I think about my children. And so I want to give kids the same quality of education that I want somebody to give mine. And lastly, I mean, I don't have time to waste. It's a resource that I can't get back. And so I try to maximize the time I have and where I'm using it. But the burnout is there. That's the reason why I come home every weekend and don't do anything but Netflix and chill. I don't want to travel. I don't want to go anywhere. I don't want to go to the party. I don't want to go to the cookout. It feels like too much energy. And that's what COVID did do to me. Now, things that I used to enjoy now feel like too much. I'm like, that's a lot. I'm good.
Yeah.
So going to work is winning the battle. Like, hey, going to work, making it through the day. My cousin asked me, are you depressed? And I was like, I don't know. It's my new norm. And so, and you see that in other teachers as well. It's like the things that brought you joy, that people are slowly tapping back into that. They're slowly starting to go back and travel, going back to concerts, you know, but not having it this whole time, not having that place of recreation, not having that place of relief. It's 2 years of pent up stuff that was trying to get out. And that's what we're seeing.
Mm-hmm. And I think that also just being authentic with yourself and recognizing that, hey, I'm in a space of burnout. I will say that the people that I have surrounded myself around are very supportive with the notion of burnout. But I know that when I was growing up, that idea of You work. You're not burnt out. You just are tired. Pick yourself back up. Go to bed, pick yourself back up and do it again the next day. There's no room for burnout because you got to keep working. And so, quote unquote, new normal of actually embracing that authentic feeling of, hey, saying, yes, I'm tired. And it is okay to be tired. It is okay to be burnt out. Because as we continue to suppress it, we are doing nothing but damaging ourselves, our kids, who we're supposed to be the leaders for, and our community. Because we all know very well that within our community, minority communities, there is a huge disproportionate disadvantage. And so if we're showing up and we are already tired, we are not acknowledging that we are fatigued, how good are we going to be for the community?
Sorry.
So, with that being said, Ms. Sherina, what are some nuggets that we can allow for people to take away after they have listened to this and received so much positive insight on, well, what the heck is going on as we return back to school with all this stress?
All right. So, first thing is recognition, like really learning the warning signs as it relates to you being burned out. The next thing is that once you recognize those signs, you want to reverse them. Like really problem solve as it relates to how to make things better for you. So lower the demands for yourself. Emphasize tasks as it relates to what you can and cannot control. If your workplace demands that you can't fulfill, then you must renegotiate them. Look at them in a different manner. Also, build in regular time when you await your demands. Like really take consideration as it relates to that self-care. also really setting boundaries from, you know, boundaries with people. And take up alternative activities that bring you satisfaction. And you're not alone. Sometimes we feel as professionals that we're the only ones that feel this way. So we are not alone. So reach out to others for support. And also with resilience, examine your lifestyle and look for ways to build your ability to withstand the stress. Something Ms. Ashley discusses, you know, her spiritual background. So it's very important that we really review the information that we heard today and acknowledge if it's really going on with us. And it sounds like it is with the teachers, the children. But we have to do something about it. And we can advocate for ourselves to, with different types of leaders and let them know, hey, COVID, coming out of COVID, there is a new norm. We cannot do the same as we did before. That is definitely not realistic. And be very intentional. Be very intentional as it relates to what you're doing. And if this is not for you, if you feel like you cannot do it, then it's okay to leave because we're hurting ourselves and we're hurting our kids. Okay, Ms. Sasha?
Yeah, and I would just say also, this is an election year for North Carolina. And so as a result, we know, we see that there are a lot of flaws within our education system and how nothing was built in as we return back to school. Using this voice, using your voice as an opportunity to say, hey, we need to renegotiate what the system, the academic and the education system looks like, because we cannot continue to push people to the limit. We can't. And I think that this is a good example of how and why it is going to be important to vote and to begin to advocate, especially for parents to be able to advocate and support our teachers, teachers supporting ourselves. So recognizing those symptoms, recognizing those signs, recognizing that your emotions are a reason for maybe you to tune in and listen to what's going on in your body. You're mad for a reason. You're sad for a reason. You're tired for a reason. Stop pushing it down and recognize and acknowledge what's going on. Individually, try to work on it, like you said, Ms. Smith, reversing it. That may even be talking to somebody, either professionally or other colleagues, because I know you are not the only one. Mm-hmm. Resiliency comes in so many different shapes and forms. And then getting out there with resiliency also comes that advocacy, especially if you have kids going through the academic system. Any final thoughts from you guys?
I do like to just remind of the difference between stress and burnout and a burnout. So if you have stress, your next stage is burnout. And if you so burn out, your next stage is going to be tapped out. So if you in the burned out stage, you need to recognize where you at and get some attention or pay attention to where you are. That self-care is so important. And I do want to thank each of our panelists, I guess, Ms. Jasmine, Mr. Marlon, and Ms. Ashley, for your transparency and just sharing your voice, because I know with Ms. Jasmine being new to the school system and Ms. Ashley, you being a coach, that she got some nuggets, because when you was talking, she was just a nod and like, okay, I didn't know that. So even to be able to be in that capacity for her
as we're having this discussion that I'm sure that this is going to reach a lot of people within the school system. So thank each of you again.
Awesome, guys. Until next time, take care of yourself so that we can definitely take care of each other.
Thank you so much for listening to Just Me Podcast. If you are seeking further one-on-one consultations, worksheets, and action steps from the ladies at Just Me Podcast, please review the monthly subscription packages starting at $9.99 at www.patreon, that's patreon.com/Just Me Podcast and the number one. If you are seeking further one-on-one diagnoses, interventions, and treatment plans, please consider scheduling an appointment with an individual counselor at Journeys Counseling Center. Journeys can be reached at 336-294-1349. The mission of Just Me Podcast is to use authentic conversations to uplift one's mind, body, and soul. The goal of Just Me Podcast is to offer affordable education and insight to individuals who experience financial barriers to accessing individualized behavioral health support. With that being said, the information, including opinions, advice, and recommendations discussed in this podcast, is intended for informational and educational purposes only. Such information is not intended to substitute the recommendations of your own licensed therapist or healthcare provider. Although we are licensed behavioral health professionals, we are not your licensed behavioral health professional. As a result, the advice mentioned on this podcast should not replace the recommendations offered by your own qualified health professional.